In association with iFanboy, welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress, and it's time again for another panel from another convention this summer. Just this past weekend, it was the Wizard World Chicago Comic Con, and the guy himself, Ethan Van Sciver, asked me to moderate his panel. I was happy to do so. It was a great hour featuring talk about Ethan's past accomplishments, like his creator-owned character, Cyberfrog, his work on Impulse, The Flash, Green Lantern, and some hints of some new projects coming along the way. Plus, Ethan convinced the Wizard promoters to have a baby grand piano rolled in, and he played some of his songs for us. You're going to hear some pretty funny songs about Wolverine, Star Trek, and Ethan's own plans for a post-apocalyptic world after nuclear disaster. Today's episode of Word Balloon is brought to you by InStockTrades.com, where you'll find great savings on all your favorite hardbacks, paperbacks, essentials, omnibus editions, absolute editions, all with values of 35% or more off the standard retail price. You can get the absolute edition of Green Lantern Rebirth from Jeff Johns and Ethan Van Sciver. Not only does it recollect Green Lantern Rebirth 1 through 6, it also has the first issue of Green Lantern, the preview story from Wizard Magazine, and a tale from the Green Lantern Secret Files of 2005, featuring artwork from Darwin Cook. It's a great collection. The standard retail price is $75, but at InStockTrades.com, it is just $47.25. You can reach back for a classic Impulse story if you get the trade paperback Flash Mercury Falling, featuring the art of Ethan Van Sciver and Eric Battle, with a great script by Todd DeZago. The standard retail price is $14.99 at InStockTrades.com, just $9.44. Don't forget about their sister site discount comic book service at dcbservice.com for all your pre-order monthly needs. To find out more, check out the website. There is tons of Ethan Van Sciver product waiting for you at instocktrades.com. Before we get started, I wanted to say that we didn't expect the piano to come. You're going to hear our doubts that the piano is going to show up at the beginning of the panel. So there wasn't an opportunity to get a mic check in terms of hearing how the piano and the singing would sound. Using our recording equipment. The sound is great on the panel. You're going to enjoy it, and the sound is fine for the songs. There's a little bit of overmodulation rumble underneath the songs. Sorry, there's nothing I can do about it. The good news is it sounds fine in your computer speakers. It does sound better if you're wearing earbuds, though, but really, I think you'll enjoy the whole program as we enjoy this session with Ethan Van Sciver, a great panel from the Wizard Chicago show on this edition of Word Balloon.
So should we roll until the...
Because
I have a feeling we're not going to get a piano
How would they get a piano in here now?
Beats the hell out of me. Oh, man.
I'm sorely...
The Stooges are going to walk in. Come on, numbskulls, put up the piano now. Man. Well, thanks for coming out. And thank you for the applause for the Mo Howard, the poor Mo Howard that I just did.
That was very good.
I'm John Suntress. I have a podcast called Word Balloon, and it's at wordballoon.com, and I'm afforded the opportunity to interview great writers and artists, like our guest today.
And mediocre ones, too.
No. A-list all the way. And it's always a pleasure to have conversations with Ethan Van Sciver, ladies and gentlemen. So let's... I don't know if you've ever heard our conversations, but they're always candid and frank, and I always appreciate that from Ethan. And it's good to see him here in person at Rosemont. So thank you for coming this weekend.
It's my pleasure to be here at Rosemont and to actually be sitting here with you, who is normally just a little voice coming out of my iPod.
Do you sketch while we talk?
No.
Do you work while we're talking?
Almost never.
Really?
In
That's
fact,
nice.
I almost never sketch or work, period. I'm usually doing anything but.
Now.
When we talk, I literally have an analyst couch in my office that I lie down on, and I do this like Woody Allen as I talk to you.
So not true. So not true. No, you're relaxed, and it's always fun and interesting. Should we do a biography? Should we go back to the beginning?
Well, yeah, sure.
What drew you to draw, if you'll pardon the pun?
Okay. Well,
way back.
Yeah. Like when I was a kid, my dad's friend. My dad was painting the Osmond's house.
Really?
Okay. We lived in Salt Lake City, Utah, and my dad was a painter to make ends meet. You know, it was me and my sister and my brother Josiah. So it was just the three of us at the time, and he was painting Jimmy Osmond's goddamn house white. And I'm in there crawling around. I remember being like a little kid, 3 or 4 years old, and running around the house and everything, their tarps and everything. And this one guy, it could have been Jimmy Osmond, I'm not sure, said, "Hey, you're a good kid. Here, buy yourself a treat." And he gave me a dollar bill. And so I was like, awesome. And we went to a 7-Eleven or something like that. And my dad said, you know, you're supposed to buy a treat. And I bought a 3-pack of Superman comics. Remember when they would come like polybagged, you know, and you would just get whatever. They'd put two good ones on the outside and then like ROM Space Knight number 68 in the middle. You're like, damn it, you know. But they were all Superman comics and they were all good. And immediately flipping through them and looking at these colorful pictures of superheroes, I had to learn to draw them myself. And so what I used to do was I would take a piece of paper and I would fold it a million times so that there would be windows, you know, like box shapes. And I would fill each box with a superhero, all the superheroes I knew. And oftentimes they would be naked. And I don't really know why.
Interesting.
Yeah, but I remember my mom found one, and she's like, why is Wonder Woman naked? And I'd be like, I don't know.
Why not?
Yeah.
Wouldn't be the answer back. All right.
So that's how I started drawing. I just started drawing dinosaurs and things and things that interested me. And at some point, somebody started to tell me that I was good.
And did you have a teacher or somebody like that? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you're a kid, really being told that you're good at something is very encouraging, and it makes you want to keep doing more of it.
Absolutely.
So somebody told me I was good, and I started to believe them. And I don't think I was that good. I don't think there was anything special about the way I drew as a kindergartner or anything like that. But to get praise, I just kept doing it. That's something to remember. I remember that now as a father. You know, I try to find what my son's interested in and then really tell him how terrific he is at it. He's extraordinary at it, and hope that it kind of clicks with him the way it did with me.
Absolutely. Were there teachers along the way that kind of helped you develop your style?
Yeah, like in third or fourth grade, somebody said, you know, we have an art class for the eighth graders. It's an advanced art class that meets after school. And what's the story, by the way, Mike?
Is it no piano?
Apparently it is on its way.
Oh, that's awesome.
The Three Stooges are going to wheel a piano in. All right, good.
Roll it in.
Hopefully we'll get some music today.
Yeah,
well.
Yeah. All right, so art class, eighth grade after school.
Yeah,
I'm
cool.
Sitting there, this little kid with all these older kids, and they have Maybelline ads, and you're supposed to copy them perfectly.
Okay.
And that's the first time I ever received like instruction and criticism. And it was, I ate it up. I loved it because I'd sit there and try to draw that woman's face. And, you know, the art teacher would look at it and go, oh, you know, you should have come in a little bit closer here on this line and that line. And then the other kids would look at mine and with respect.
Wow.
Which was, you know, cool.
Third grader, absolutely.
Yeah. And then they put me in a gifted program in the sixth grade. And this is something that really stayed with me my whole life. And I tell this to my son all the time, too. You know, taught me to kind of believe in myself and my own ideas when other people don't always support them. We're in this gifted program, and they decide, you know, there's nothing to do there. There are contests that you enter and things like that. You know, write stories. And they said, Life Cereal is hosting and promoting this big contest nationwide, okay? And what it's going to be is, if you can... That's a baby grand piano.
Awesome. Fantastic.
Oh, so good.
I hope you know some Liberace.
I know way too much Liberace, sir. I hope that's not upsetting. But anyway, there's Life Cereal Contest, and they said, you know, the whole class was going to get together. You had to write and storyboard a commercial, television commercial for Life Cereal. Sixth grade, all the other kids in the class, I think, in the gifted class, weren't really gifted or talented. They were just super cool. They were the popular kids. And then there was me, who didn't really get good grades. And they'd be like, why are you in here? You're like a C student. You know, what are you doing in here? And so it was like, what are we going to do for this contest? What are we going to do for this commercial? Everybody can kind of put their seats in a ring, I guess, around it.
Right now, it's just like Moses. The Red Sea is parting as this grand piano is being wielded towards the front, so Ethan will be able to play for us later.
I'm glad we got the piano.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's great.
Right in the front there.
Facing nowhere.
Turn it sideways so that I'm sitting right here. That would make me happy.
So Life Cereal commercial.
Okay, so the rest of the cool kids said, we're going to do this Cinderella story. And I said, you know, about Life Cereal, I can't even remember what it was, but it was a very mediocre idea. And I said, I think my idea is better. And I had this grand, like, Thus Spake Zarathustra kind of theme to it, this 2010, whatever it was, that I can't even remember. But it was this big, ambitious idea for a commercial. And they looked at me like I was insane. And they said, no, we're going to do this. So it was like 6-1. And I was like, I told the teacher, I said, can I do my own? And she said, sure, do your own. So I had to do the entire commercial, 6 people's work, all by myself. I won the nationwide contest for the school.
Wow.
And that's, you know, that was the first thing. I had my picture in the paper and everything.
Oh,
and they
God.
Shut up after that.
That's
Those kids
awesome.
Started to listen to me.
Hilarious.
So,
are you getting ready to give us a little musical interlude?
Oh, with that.
Fantastic. All right, there you go. So if you've listened to the Word Balloon podcast, there are examples of Ethan's songwriting and song parodies. And I am thrilled that we are getting this. This is like...
I do reinterpretations,
excuse me. Yeah, this is like VH1 Storytellers with Ethan Van Sciver.
15 years at Juilliard. Move in now, move out, hands up now, hands down. Back up, tell me what you're gonna do now. Move in now, breathe out, hands up now, hands down. Back up, tell me what you're gonna do now. Keep on rolling, 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 rolling. Keep on rolling, 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 rolling. Now I know you all like this shit right here. LAMP biscuit right here. People in the house, put your hands in the air, cause if you don't care, then we don't care. 1, 2, 3, 4, present to the saints. Jones are for your picks and the Limp Bizkit mix. Where the fuck you at, punk? Shut the fuck up. I'm back the fuck up, where you fuck the track up. Rolling, 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 rolling. Keep on rolling. Keep on rolling. This is way too nice of a piano to ruin Limp Bizkit on. Or am I helping Limp Bizkit?
No, I think you're doing well.
Song I've ever written in my life. No, it isn't, but it's one of them. Song I've ever written. It's very mellow, almost mournful. Nobody told me when I was a kid. Big deal, it isn't, I promise. But I wish they did. Wolverine is gay. I learned the hard way. Tragic part. I lowered my pants. and a white stance. San Diego Comic-Con. That's where I learned that Wolverine is
not the reason why he left Marvel and came to DC. Although,
yes,
I don't... Okay, there you go.
That's the behind-the-scenes story.
Man, you know, you've worked with writers like Jeff Johns and Grant Morrison, and these are very, you know, world-building writers themselves. And, you know, can you quantify a difference in terms of approach?
Between, like, Grant Morrison and Jeff Johns,
yeah,
and other writers?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can. I mean, they're very different guys with different approaches to what they do. And someone like Grant Morrison, I wish I had a Grant Morrison script and I could just, like, flash it into all of your heads so you could understand. But Grant Morrison writes scripts like dream interpretation almost. Like this is something like a dream journal. Like, he dreamt it happening and then he wrote it all down. So that it doesn't really quite... You read it and you go, I see what you mean. And then when you try to draw it, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. It's this magic trick that he does. He told me one time in a script for New X-Men 134, which I didn't end up drawing. Another artist, Kieron Grant, you know, got it after I was fired from Marvel Comics. Give me the script. And he said, and I want you all to picture this, because this is what it said. It was like, bunch of mutant students are holding hands in a circle. It's a ring. And they're concentrating and levitating planet Earth above them. And suddenly, Beak runs by squawking, and it distracts them, and the globe breaks and shatters into a million pieces. And I said, I can picture that. I know what you mean. And then I sat down to draw it, and I was like, what the hell is he talking about? Where is this happening? There's no context for it. What globe? What's a globe? That, you know, is this some astral projection? Is it a real physical thing? Like, what in the world? The whole thing doesn't make sense. Like, when you sit down, you have to invent and answer questions for yourself, because Grant is not available by telephone to call and be like, the hell? You know, you can't do that to Grant Morrison. On the other hand, and so I did in fact draw it a certain way, and then I did like the first six pages of it, and then went back to DC. Kieron Grant finished it and drew it a completely different way. So, I mean, that's just the way it is with him. With Jeff, things are a lot more easy to understand, and he leaves things open to interpretation, but they're things that, you know, as an artist, you feel comfortable with. And if not, he's always there to answer your phone call and go, dude, which is what he says every time he sees me call.
You know,
does he do that to you too, Don? Dude! Yeah.
There you go.
He's like the captain of the football team, right? That's how he is.
The first words
out of
his mouth.
Yeah.
Dude!
We, and I'm sorry, I skipped the mid-90s. So, you know, there was Cyberfrog, there was your early DC stuff, you're doing Impulse and things,
yeah,
like that. And yeah, tell me about that that 90s period, because that's always my foggy period and everything, so... Cyberfrog was your own creation?
Yeah. Cyberfrog was how I got started, and I did it myself first for the other guys at the Airbrush Cart, where I worked at the mall. And I worked at the Cherry Hill, New Jersey mall, painting, airbrushing T-shirts and jackets and things. Like, it was 1993, so dudes would come up to me like, can you do like a big pie leaf and have it say insane in the membrane? And then on the back, have this dude with an Uzi and big feet. And I'd be like, yes, I suppose I can. And I learned graffiti art that way, so I can still do that a little bit.
Cool.
But everybody at the cart wanted to do comics. They all wanted to, you know, it was 93 when Wildstorm was popular and Todd McFarlane. Everybody was making lots of money, and it just seemed like almost like a hoop dream, you know, to like go and join comics, because something that almost anybody can aspire to. So we did CyberFrog, or I did CyberFrog. I used to draw these pages and bring them in and show them to the guys. They were doing their own thing. And eventually I decided to go and find a publisher. I found a company in Elkhart, Indiana, a born-again Christian comic book company, that were publishing Christian versions of Spawn. Essentially.
Like, does that work?
It was like Spawn, kind of, but like he was helping Jesus. And Jesus appeared to him with, like, covered in blood on a sword and a horse and everything.
Wow.
And, yeah, really, like, bizarre for me. Because, I mean, I was raised with some Christian stuff in my life,
sure,
but I'd never seen Jesus drenched in blood before. Like you know, I was witnessing here. And they published CyberFrog. And from there, I went to, I did two issues there and then was picked up by Harris Comics. I mean, the thing about it is breaking into comics is awesome. If you do it the right way, it's fairly easy. It's just a stepladder kind of process. I had a published comic book in my hands and I was able to show it to people. It's like a business card.
Sure.
You know, rather than your portfolio, oh, look at these pages that might be a comic book someday. Actually having a comic book and handing it out to people means that you've done a comic book before and could potentially do another one. So
excellent.
That's how I started getting paid in this business.
Very cool. We will open it to questions at some point. So if you guys,
well,
have
let's open it to another song.
And absolutely, let's. This is a good opportunity to break. So I think you got to release the CD eventually, man. Or now, you know, whatever. Or they don't have CDs anymore. But you know, I think we need a collection of iTunes songs and stuff.
All right, let me see. A long time ago, I have to explain this. This is my body odor trilogy because. I went to the bank one time with my wife, and it was very, very strange. I saw the weirdest human being I've ever seen in my entire life. He looked like a Berenstain bear. Okay, he was from the mountains. He had like overalls with one strap on, and he was driving this. I think he was driving a Toyota. I can't remember. It's in the song. But anyway, I walked in, and he was dripping urine behind him, and he smelled so bad that I got home, and I had to write a song about him. But before I did, I went to the parking lot and I looked in his car, and like his entire seat was like blackened where he was sitting and everything, and it was insane. So anyway, I wrote a song of amazement, appreciation, and tolerance for him. And it is a literal recap of the events. My wife couldn't park us because of your carcass's rear black belt. Hold on a second. There it is. Okay, let's start again. My wife couldn't park us because of your carcass was rear blocked to the last parking space. I didn't get a look in your face. So you waddled in the bank like you owned the whole place. Unsure of your gender with just one suspender assigned, a horrible chore. You piddled all over the floor. It was then you won me over and I wanted to know more. Because you creep like me, you creep like a dead man. Ted Kennedy's bedpan, a primitive work of art. But what is so freaky about the demon when you're in my heart? Played this in years. I learned you could corrode a 97 Toyota Tercel with your own liquid waste. It may very well be your taste, but I'm afraid that front seat's gonna need to be replaced because you're reeking of ammonia, but not when I phone you because we're miles and miles apart. You'd articulate views on UFOs and the Jews because you're in my heart. Barely remember that one. So that was me realizing that people who smell bad might be interested as long as you talk to them over the phone. And then this is my own confession. I sweat on the dampest Twitter t-shirts ever met. If I decide to hug you, soak it all through, I'll drench you with regret. I sweat, so I hope that you don't mind getting wet. Cause I am moister than most, the Father, Son, the Holy Ghost would dry me, I'll bet. And I fling it when I walk.
hesitate to play this one because it may be raw on people's nerves right now, but yeah, I'll do it anyway. Okay. I wrote a love song to BP. You know, I just feel like everybody's picking on him. When you cry over spilt oil, I'll capture your tears with a kiss. You've gone beyond petroleum. We can get beyond this. Mistakes were made, games were played. 20 billion was the tune. But if we all can work together, you'll get your life back soon. And if a pelican can forgive, and it doesn't hold a grudge, if a blue crab says live and let live, then who am I to judge? That's right. There's another verse, but I can't remember it now. Do you like Star Trek?
You know I do.
I don't. They go where no man has before, and yet I snore. I guess I just don't get it, 'cause I'm glad they have colorful shirts, but the show really hurts. I'd sooner forget it. But oh, when Star Trek is over, we can yawn and go cry in the shower. When Star Trek, dear God, is finally over, we can marvel at the length of an hour. And we can watch the scenes as the credits roll, scenes that we didn't see. I wish that lizard-headed guy was in this one. I saw an episode with the Needle Wolf from Catalina Caper. It's pretty. The captain could try to rape her. It wasn't PC. And that red shirt gimmick really makes me ill. Set your phaser to kill and aim it at me. But oh, when Star Trek is finally over, we can smile and go mail the letter. When Star Trek is finally over, we can wonder if the next one is better. But no such luck. No, the trouble with triples. Is that they suck? The trouble with triples. Ray Harryhausen couldn't help it, huh, guys? Is that they?
Where no comic artist has gone before. Very nice. That was very good. Excellent.
Half of the cast of Star Trek is rushing to shame.
I know. John DeLance is going to kick your ass, man.
I hope so.
Are you going to go try and get any autographs? You're a big autograph hunter. I know this because I follow you on Facebook.
Yes.
And he is really passionate about old movies. And literally, I think he and I are the only people alive that still remember
I know.
Most of these people.
We have the most obtuse, like, obscure conversations ever about...
Marsha Hunt,
yeah. Rock Hudson movies and stuff like that. But, yeah, I don't know. Lisa Loring is supposed to be here. That's the closest thing to a real star at this show. She was Wednesday Addams on the Addams Family. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, that's sort of cool, but...
John Savage, Deer Hunter?
Yeah, I mean, see that...
Hair?
Right. Okay, all right. 1969 is when Hollywood died to me. You know what I mean? I understand that the 70s had gems, okay, interspersed. We had Star Wars, we had Jaws, we had the early works of Martin Scorsese, but for the most part, everything was orange and brown and blurry and screw it. I mean, I don't
Easy
know
Rider.
What happened. Easy Rider was 1969.
Right.
Yeah, that was it.
Right.
I love that movie.
Collapsed. That's the studio.
That movie had the biggest laugh at the end of it of all time. To me, Easy Rider ended the same way Jaws did. You know, they blow up the shark and everybody cheers, and you shoot the hippies and everybody cheers. Yay! Yay! Keeping America beautiful. Oh no, I feel terrible. They were smuggling drugs across country. Oh, and they're dead now. So sad. Okay, anyway.
Back to comics.
Yeah, I don't know what happened in 1970. Movies turned orange. And then Rod Serling turned orange. And I was happy when he was black and white. I was happy when he was gray. The works of Rod Serling, 1959 to 1964, 1965, Twilight Zone. Rod Serling in 1972, what?
Yeah, Night Gallery, I guess.
Night Gallery.
Yeah.
Sucks. Sucks. So something happened. I really blame the counterculture.
7 Days in May, also black and white, and then that period from 59 to 64.
Yeah.
Great political movie.
Yeah.
So I knew you know that movie. Mm-hmm. Back to comics. And actually, folks, questions? Any questions for the audience, or should we keep
going? They know everything.
Is Paul still in there? It was like before it died.
What?
Would you put like Sam Peckinpah in there before Hollywood?
I do like Peckinpah movies. Yeah, they're okay. They're good. I mean, but in general, like I said, he would be, Peckinpah was like late 60s, and then, okay. In general, though, I mean, you have some gems, but for the most part, it is. It's just dreadful. And television is awful. I mean,
All in the Family is awful.
No, but McMillan and Wife and all the...
Well, McMillan and Wife. Rock Hudson with a mustache is 100 Kinds of Wrong, absolutely.
All right.
No, I'm with you.
Meanwhile, I'll watch any
Columbo
sitcom
was
from
good.
The 50s.
Columbo was good.
I disagree.
Interesting.
I don't like Columbo.
Man.
Yeah. Sorry. Right. Sorry, no, we part ways.
Exactly. Well, that's how we always remain friends, even though we disagree on some things. That's quite all right. Yeah. The we should steer it back to comics, because I'm curious. Your years on Impulse, how much did that influence what you ended up doing on The Flash?
I don't know. Impulse was a weird gig for me because it was me pretending to be somebody else to get a job. And sometimes this happens, Cyberfrog ended abruptly when we had a movie deal and a toy deal in place and an animation deal on Fox Kids and wow, everything was going great. And then Japan came in, like the Japanese contingent of
animation.
Was the company? No. Why do I want to say Toy Biz now? Playmates Toys.
Okay.
They were doing the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. We were doing Cyberfrog Toys, and they did prototypes, and they took me out. Japan came in and said, you're all fired. Fired everybody that I knew at Playmates and canceled all of their projects. So I got this drunken phone call from a guy. It woke me up at noon. I'm passed out. Ethan, I hate to tell you bad news. I just got fired from Playmates, and everything, is basically put to an end. But, here's my phone number, and keep in touch. I hope I'll land on my feet. And I went, whatever. I hung up the phone and went back to sleep. Never wrote down his number. Oh, no. He's probably the president of Mattel now. Holy cow. Look, it's the Orange Lantern symbol above the door.
It is.
Half of it.
That's true. That's very true. Interesting.
Why did they put that in this room? Sorry, mild diversion.
We can stay on that diversion because you've done these seminal runs on Green Lantern and The Flash.
Yeah.
Rebirth, certainly. And it's cool now, the Rebirth Digital, now on the iPad and things.
Is it really?
Indeed.
Oh.
Absolutely. I hope some royalty checks are coming your way soon.
Me too. Thanks for alerting me.
Sorry.
For that. Yeah.
Consult your attorney. Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But you did these really bold design differences, starting with Iron Heights, I guess, with the Flash and everything, because you guys created all these new villains.
Yeah.
For
Iron Heights was almost a Batman story that we
really?
Just got together. Yeah, Jeff and I, I don't know if Jeff was, but he is now. At the time, I've always been horror oriented. I think that like superhero comics work best. Bright and happy superhero comics contrasted with these dark, grisly horror elements. And Jeff was doing Stars and Stripe at the time, so I guess he wasn't really in that frame of mind.
Very bright and happy. Yeah.
But we got together and I said, we should create villains. And Jeff already had this roster of villains that he created when he was 13. Like Plunder and Tar Pit and these characters that they have names that a kid would give to superhero villains, So we hooked some of those up. Girder he drew, and I was like, let's really think of this prison as like a really nasty place to be. The really scary supervillains in Iron Heights, which is the Flash's prison in Keystone, is a pipe. It's like a pipe underground, and it's rusty, and it's dripping with water, and the people there are all like dying of pneumonia. They're all sick,
sure.
From it. So if we had a guy named Girder who was once, like a Colossus-style supervillain, he's rusted now. He's orange. He coughs. like that, what's that, rust, dust kind of stuff, you know. His hair is like Brillo, and it's grown out. He's got a beard now that's... And you get excited about stuff like that. You go, okay, now I can picture this place, and let's fill it with other inhabitants and show how badly this prison has affected them. And the first thing that we did, we decided we're going to create a main villain, and it was Murmur. It turned out to be this character named Murmur, and it was the really first collaboration that we had where we went, oh, we really work together very well, because this is a 50-50 joint effort where each of us contributed something. I said, here's a guy who has Tourette's syndrome in the sense that he kills people and then can't help but confess it. And so he cuts out his own tongue in prison and sews his mouth shut, does whatever he can do to get himself to stop talking, you know. And I was living next door to this weird guy in upstate New York who used to make maple syrup in his front yard. And I don't know what it is. These people, everybody thinks they can make maple syrup up there. It's up near Woodstock, right? And everybody's hostile because they used to live in the city. They used to be like, you know, it's like what happened to the cast of Mad Men now. You know, it's like they're bitter and living in the mountains in upstate New York, can't afford to live on Fifth Avenue anymore. This guy was one of those guys, and he had walleye, and I love that. I love walleye. It's great because it's not just one eye, it was both eyes like this. So I really enjoyed him, and I gave that to Murmur. You know, I gave him walleye based on him. But this dude used to make maple syrup in his front yard, and he would sell it in ostensibly cleaned out mobile oil containers.
Oh my God.
Right? And he'd write maple syrup on it. So I said to him, you know, I was like, I said, I want to learn how to make maple syrup. And he said, I could teach you. But he said it in a weird... He was not a nice man. And I was like, okay, I want you to teach me everything you know about maple syrup, because I've got mobile oil jugs too, and I'm going to undercut you in front of my house once I learn. The student will become the master. And he did not think that was funny at all. He hated me ever since. Then he set the mountain behind us on fire with cigarettes. But anyway, I was living in a weird place when I was doing Iron Heights. It was a lot of...
Well, that theme of coming up with these horrific monsters was continued in, you know, Green Lantern and Sinestro.
It works.
Corps. Yeah,
we realized that it works. Flash works when you show Flash up against, you know, bright, happy colors, speed, and everything.
Absolutely.
Against scary villains. And it works for Batman, obviously. Thought it would work for Green Lantern, too. And it's what I do. I mean, I, you know, so much of horror in comics disappoints me because it's essentially these Halloween elements. Here's a jack-o'-lantern and a skull, and it's supposed to be scary. It's not upsetting. If it doesn't upset you, if it doesn't give you nightmares, if it doesn't look like something that shouldn't be, something from your subconscious, it doesn't work. And so, you know, Sinestro Corps became an effort to create aliens. Individual aliens that all had, you know, most of the, I keep digressing over and over again, but the thing that really bothered me about Green Lantern is that so many of the artists who draw the other 7,200 aliens do these really bland, kind of boring, you know, lizard men, and you know, with the Green Lantern logo, there's no imagination. Like, what might there be on all these other? You can do whatever you want. You know, it doesn't even have to have eyes in its head. It could have, you know, three legs and a little bar stool type of thing on the top and some antenna. Who knows what? You know, just start thinking about shapes and be creative. I mean, there are infinite possibilities, and it bothers me that it's so often just squandered, you know, the creative opportunities handed to you by something like Green Lantern. So that's what Sinestro Corps was. We just said, you know, let's make the scariest, most horrific, weird aliens that we possibly could. And Crib came out of that. Crib was going to be the sequel to Flash Iron Heights. Okay, the whole thing was going to be, Jeff and I were going to do Iron Heights 2, Fear of Heights. How cool is that? Why didn't we do that? And it was going to be this whole thing where we were going to introduce the death house that was behind. You know, okay. They decided, look, Flash, we love you, but we're going to put these guys to death now because they keep getting out, they keep causing trouble. Keystone City's a very conservative city, so it's like citizens are all for it. Execute these guys. Execute Captain Cold. And so the first problem emerges when you meet this woman named Crib, and she is this mutated, awful thing with like almost like super thalidomide, you know, like she's got 100 arms and legs coming off her and everything. And what she would do is she would wrap her limbs around herself like this and then wear a dress and have two little arms poking through. And she would, I'm the nanny. And she'd come into your house and she'd eat your baby. Okay? And so, anyway, they eventually caught her and they put her in this prison and they're going to put her to death. And her lawyer says, the babies are still alive in my client. So, you know, essentially, if you run electricity through her, you're going to kill all these babies. And so it was just going to be this weird thing where, you know, yeah, it's like, let, you know, if you let her free, then, you know. So that was the whole thing. Crib didn't end up getting used. Carousel was going to be a Ghost Rider villain. I aspire to work on Ghost Rider someday. If I ever work at Marvel Comics, I want Ghost Rider. Because Ghost Rider, Mike's heard this speech already. Ghost Rider is the coolest character that's been misused for so many years. And I excited about that. But I had this vision of this ghostly woman draped in white, floating, you know, this ballerina kind of thing. You couldn't see her face and everything. And she had these skeletal white horses that were attached to her by, like, strands of linen. And that would just slowly circle her like a merry-go-round. And where do you use an idea like that? I mean, you have an idea like that, and it's a great visual, and you don't know where it came from. It came from God in your sleep. And you know, there's no place to put it. And I told it to Jeff. I called Jeff, and I'm like, okay, listen to this. You're going to think I'm nuts. But listen to this idea, okay? And Jeff thought about it and said, make the horses aliens, and then, you know, draw it like that. And I went, okay. And I made her a Sinestro Corps member. He wrote this whole backstory to it. But when you have ideas like that that you don't know where they come from, you've got to put them down on paper and you've got to use them. I've got a Sinestro Corps member that I'm introducing in Untold Tales of Blackest Night, number one. And she's Earth's Sinestro Corps member. And her name is Voodoo Doll. And what she does is she creates orange, yellow pins, sticks herself with them, and they go through your head, essentially. That's going to be her whole thing, her whole gimmick. So it's this weird form of, like, self, you know, mutilation that happens to you. And she, you know, can put up with it pretty easily. And you know, creating all the Earth lanterns is something that I think I want to do next year. So we have Earth's Red Lantern, Earth's Blue Lantern. We know who they are.
Oh, excellent. So. See, that's what I like is, and I really think, and this is something we talked about in the spring at C2E2, I think a lot of your ideas are great visuals, and usually with a guy like Jeff, you guys are able to then get a foundation of a good story, too.
Mm-hmm.
So that way you guys are really able to kind of, you know, here's the story, but also, man, wouldn't I love a toy that looks like this? And wouldn't I love a, you know, I mean, that's the thing. Yeah. I really think that there is more thought behind the visual. You know, that's the thing.
I have a real tough time sitting back and letting a writer just tell me what to do. This is something that, you know, luckily working with Jeff is rarely like that. Sometimes Jeff's like, this is my vision. This is what we're going to do. But most of the time, I need to control things myself. I have very, very strong ideas. I need to work with writers who will help me with that, who help me develop them, so that I can say to Jeff, here's this ghostly woman.
Right.
And Jeff can say, oh, I know how to use that best. Maybe not the way that, you know, you were thinking, but something close to it that'll make a great character and a great action figure and then, you know, all this stuff. And I enjoy that. And that's the project that I'm working with Gail right now is a lot like that.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like an idea that I've had for 4 years. I've been developing. Everybody thought I was crazy. Dan DiDio said, what are you kidding me? Say it like Dan DiDio.
Ethan, I don't get it. You're kidding me. This is insane.
All right.
I don't think it's going to work.
Right. And then there you go. Perfect impersonation.
Thank you.
Until I said to him, Dan, let me draw it for you. Because so often, like, you know, you have ideas that cannot be conveyed with words necessarily, and you have to show people what it is. You have to say, I know you think this. I know you think Sinestro is this, because you've seen him on the Super Friends. You think he's this cackling goofball, you know. But he's not. He's a Hitler. He's a fascist dictator. What do you mean? And he should wear yellow. You know, he's wearing blue for some. When you say he should wear yellow, because people go, oh, that's a big change. And then you go, let me just show you. Let me show you what you could have instead of what you have now.
That's like when Frank Miller took, you know, the John Romita Kingpin and in one panel transformed him. And that's really what you did.
That's
with Sinestro
awesome.
Corps. Yeah. Absolutely, man. No, he's never been more dangerous. He went from being that goofball Charlie Callis character, and that's why they cast him to play him in the 70s and this kind of crazy little thing, to a real menacing threat.
Yeah.
And it's only evolved since then and everything. So, no, yeah. That was huge, man, that you did that.
Awesome. That's a big compliment.
I would say so.
All right, let's play.
All right, excellent. There you go. More music. Fantastic.
Oh, This is so nice. Does anybody here play piano, by the way?
One man.
Sort of.
One man.
You do? Do you play really well? Do you play really well? All right, don't laugh at me, sir. I know it's August, but it's almost September, and September we all get ready for Christmas.
That's true.
That on Facebook, everybody got so mad at me. They really did. They were like, oh, you have no joy in your soul. I was like, you're exactly right.
They didn't hear Bomb Shelter. That's my favorite.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, this is my fantasy. This is a happy song to me. My bomb shelter is pretty nice. I took Dwight Eisenhower's advice. It's full of things I like, a stationary bike, powdered milk, Slim Jims, and rice. It's not as if I asked my spouse to excavate beneath our house. She told me it was silly. She said, now come on, really. There's just so much she allows. And it's a shame, because when the bombs are exploding, you'll all be freeloading, but I'm prepared, you see. With a mushroom problem, and there's just enough room in my bomb shelter for me and maybe my cat. What do you think of that? My bomb shelter has bonsai trees, a generator, DVDs, but it's only one man sized, so while you're vaporized, I'll enjoy its amenities, cause my bomb shelter is mine all mine, so I don't wanna hear you whine. It won't seem so dumb when the zombies come. What's my wine? That's my favorite show. Let's see if you're cocky when it's not a sake outside your little town. You'll absorb radiation while I'm on vacation 25 feet underground. I'll be drinking milk. Jam is made of silk. My bomb shelter is pretty nice. You should take Eisenhower's advice. Oh, okay. few people. That's good. This is a cover song. Listen up, everybody, if you want to take a chance, just get on the floor and do the New Kids dance. Don't worry about nothing, cause it won't take long. We're gonna put you in a trance with a funky song. Hanging tough. Till the fat lady sings, we ain't gonna give anybody any slack. And if you try to keep us down, we're gonna come right back. Hang it tough. I feel bad. This is a beautiful piano. I'm totally wasting it. Play some show tunes.
Facebook page, There are a ton of songs. Seriously, it's ridiculous in a good way. As you can tell, it's very entertaining. And I think it really does surprise me. I like, and I think the next time you go up there, you're going to have to do one of my favorites. And I'm blanking out. Unbelievable. Who sings Unbelievable?
Oh, EMF.
Yeah, of course, EMF.
EMF's a sad version of EMF's Unbelievable.
Yes, that, and I put it on my website. He has a very cryptic version of Sesame Street. And it really works more as, it really, you got to be dressed for it because he has a hoodie.
It's mournful. Yeah.
He has a hoodie on it, and the hoodie really looks like it's like this cloak of a Satan worshiper or whatever, and it's black and white, and he really looks like he's in his crawl space singing Sunny Day, and it's like the most scary, it's like the serial killer.
I create that illusion by actually being in my crawl space.
There you go. There you go. Man. Okay, so you tease a couple things coming up on Untold,
Tales
of the Sinestro Corps.
Yeah. Which is the first time I'm writing something.
I was going to ask about that because that was something that came up on our podcast. That, and I see that at DC, that a lot of artists are being given the chance to write and draw. So is this is your first foray of doing fully both at DC?
Yeah, I mean,
Cyberfrog.
They've always, Cyberfrog before, but Cyberfrog didn't really count because it was this train of thought kind of thing. I didn't sit down and write it out. I went, I think it'd be cool if this guy became a giant dragonfly. And,
Sure.
You know, it really was that way. But this time, I feel like I've learned so much over the past 10 years working with Jeff Johns and working with Grant Morrison and other writers. I got it now.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I'm not gonna come out of the box, I think, batting 1,000, but I need to begin because I'm somebody who I feel like I can't depend on other people all the time to convey my own ideas. That's no more fair than it is asking me or anyone else to always convey somebody else's ideas. So it's time to become a writer full-fledged.
That's cool.
Writer artist.
Unfortunately, I had a little hiccup in the system, and it cut off the last couple minutes, only about 2 more minutes of the panel of Ethan Van Sciver. But that essentially is what we covered. We talked a little bit more about something that we've covered in the past here at Word Balloon, and that is the ratio of artist versus writer in today's comic world. And like I said, it's something that Ethan actually covered in the last time he was on Word Balloon. So if you're curious to hear his thoughts, I would go back to that episode. But it was still a great conversation with Ethan, and I appreciated his time. And I appreciated the fact that he allowed me to moderate the panel. I hope you enjoyed the music you heard today, too. That seems to be a staple of Ethan's latest con appearances. And if he is doing a panel, I suggest you check it out because he has lots more very funny songs. And it was always entertaining and always an engaging conversation with Ethan here on Word Balloon. As we wrap up, a couple words about the Wizard Chicago show. The show has changed from what it was 2 years ago and has become more of a pop culture show. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, especially given that I would say 75 to 90% of congoers really are going to buy stuff. And if that was the case, then I don't think you were disappointed because there were a lot of great deals. If you were looking for autographs, it was a very good autograph show because there were a lot of celebrities from great sci-fi television and film, and even Illinois' governor, Rod Blagojevich, was in attendance, and he had a very healthy line as well. People from Star Trek, Battlestar Galactica, Linda Hamilton was there from the Terminator films, Michael Bain, so many actors, and a smattering of good comic book people as well. It just wasn't the comic book news and pro happening that I think you expect at other shows at C2E2, certainly at San Diego and the New York Comic Con, WonderCon, and sadly what used to be expected at Wizard Chicago shows. And that might be some of the frustration you might hear from some congoers who like a little bit more comic book professional participation. It just wasn't there. I mean, it is the week of Toronto and Baltimore this coming week, so the Wizard Chicago show was just a week before that. It is still about a month after San Diego, which I'm sure makes it that much harder to get guests. But Chicago used to be the number 2 or number 3 show when Wizard was promoting it just a couple years ago. That's not the case anymore. It's that simple. But if you were looking for a good time in terms of good buys and good autographs, then I think you'll find that most congoers were very pleased with this year's Wizard Chicago show. All I can say is I had a good time. It seemed like most of the congoers did as well. But it certainly isn't the experience that we used to have from the Wizard Chicago shows of a couple years ago. Hope you enjoyed today's program. It was brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com, where you'll find great savings on Absolute Editions, hardbacks, trade paperbacks, omnibus editions, showcases, essentials, all at 35% or more off the standard retail price. Case in point, a couple great books from Ethan Van Sciver. Like we said earlier, The Flash, Mercury Falling, this trade paperback featuring the words of Todd DeZego and the art of Ethan Van Sciver. It was a great story that featured Impulse and Max Mercury. The standard retail price is $14.99, but in in-stock trades, it's just $9.47. You can get the absolute edition of Flash Rebirth from Geoff Johns and Ethan Van Sciver. Not only does it recollect Green Lantern Rebirth 1 through 6, it also has the first issue of Green Lantern, the previous story from Wizard Magazine, and a tale from the Green Lantern Secret Files of 2005, featuring artwork from Darwin Cook. It's a great collection. The standard retail price is $75, but at InStockTrades.com, you can get it for $47.25. Check out all the values that are waiting for you at their website, InStockTrades.com. John Sutra saying thanks again for listening to Word Balloon. You can catch us usually on Tuesdays, not only here at WordBalloon.com, but also at iFanboy. Come and check out the Word Balloon archive. We have well over 300 interviews with writers, artists, actors, directors, screenwriters, all people from pop culture, all great creative words. Until next time, thanks for listening. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2010.